Senate Committee on Commerce in order and ready to go. We've got a number of bills that are up for public hearing and possible work session. I'm here to tell everyone we will not be moving any of the bills today that are Senate Bill 131, 134, 132, 133, or 135. We will be taking public hearing on those bills today. But the first thing I want to do is go into a work session on a couple of possible introductions of committee bills. And so as I gavel here, we'll have our membership to the committee here, and we're in the work session on possible introduction of committee bills. Ms. Braun, would you like to tell us a little bit about each of the two bills that we have before us?
Yes, we have two LC drafts. LC 2393, which prohibits insurers who offer motor vehicle liability policies from providing managed care services to beneficiaries, and LC 2643, which includes individuals employed in agricultural labor under the State Labor Relations Act.
Okay. And the chair would love to have a motion to allow for committee bills for LC 2393 and LC 2643. And as our practice, it's understood that this is a motion that's been made by Vice Chair Beyer, and those who are in support of the motion are not bound by that support to support the bills in the future. So if there's no objection to it, then they will be received as committee bills. And we'll close the work session on those two and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 131. And Commissioner Gardner's here. And I also have
Christy Hansen.
Christy Hansen. And then
Hammond.
I also
Hammond,
excuse me. I'm looking right at it, and I'm looking at someone else's name wanting to say Don Schellenberg. So, I don't know if Don wants to come up now. Looks like everyone at this point has checked in, is in support of it. But I also know that we started a dialogue this past Tuesday, regarding some issues on farm worker statutes. And I believe we're going to pick up on some of that today. So I tell you what, Mr. Schellenberg, I'm going to let you just stay where you're at until we see where we're going on the testimony on this one, as well as any other questions we may have for the commissioners that we did not cover on Tuesday. So, Ms. Braun, if you'll give us an overview of SB 131.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. SB 31 deletes a specific tax document reference for farm worker camp operator claiming a licensing exemption as a farm worker camp operator.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 131 is simply a bill that, since the law was originally enacted, Legislative Council has advised us that Schedule F tax filing is only one of several possible schedules that may be filed reporting farm activity by a taxpayer, and the reference to be filed filing a Schedule F should be replaced with filing any income tax return reporting farm activity. It's a simple change in reference of language. It's a clarification bill looking at the changes in tax law over the last several years.
All right. And any questions for Commissioner Gardner regarding Senate Bill 131?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Director Gardner, in just in reading this, I don't have any problem at all with what you're trying to do there, but in reading this, it appears to me that the language of this bill precludes new independent farm camp operators from establishing a business, because it requires that they be able to show a previous farm filing of some type before they could get a law, before they could get a license to do this.
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, there is no intent to stop anyone from going into that form of business, and there's no intent anywhere in the language to do that. It's just saying that when you apply for the license, to provide that that activity, should there be any prior activity. We're not requiring anybody who doesn't have any prior activity to show that they've had prior activity.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm sure that is the intent of the verbiage, but that's not what the verbiage says, is the way I read it, is my point.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's Senator Beyer, and it was prepared by Legislative Council, and I can tell you that the verbiage, what particular verbiage, could you point me to the line where you're...
Essentially, it says, as I understand it, that an income tax return, like on line 12, an income tax return reporting form activity is in the preceding tax year is a required prerequisite for getting a license.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, that's existing law, that's existing language within the law, and it's only requirement for farm labor camps. And if there is no form for a preceding year, that would not preclude them from getting a license. But the section you're referring to is existing law.
Yes, I'm aware of that, sir.
We wouldn't preclude anyone from getting a license if they didn't have a business in the preceding tax year, though.
I understand that's your intent. I'm not sure that's what this says. That's my point.
All right. Well, let me just ask regarding this particular. I'm looking at it. It looks like it's changing as the testimony says a Schedule F is coming out, and we're now seeing any tax return regarding farm activity. Do you know, Commissioner, if there's been anyone who has been denied ability to start a business that... based on them not having tax statements from a preceding year?
Mr. Chair, no, there has not been, and there would not be.
All right.
Question?
Go right ahead.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm curious to know why it is that you are bringing this bill. This seems like a Department of Revenue issue, and it seems like it's more related to tax issues, and maybe that's why Senator Woods has some confusion. That's one question. The other question would be, I guess, is whether or not dealing with the issue that Senator Woods brought up, if someone, because currently it's a Schedule F for part of a year, or and this changes to a form activities, but so not knowing I'm not a tax person, is Schedule F used for other reporting that maybe would be, by taking that out, it would be precluding someone from starting a farm labor contracting business because they maybe filed a Schedule Form F for something else? I don't know.
Senator Beyer, my reading of this, it's basically taking something that's narrowly drawn at this point that would require a Schedule F, and what I heard in the testimony is in today's tax world, people can be involved in farm activity without using a Schedule F. And my understanding is that what we're trying to do is bring it in compliance as to what is the current, lack of better terms, practice for reporting farm activity under current income tax returns.
Mr. Chair, may I, and Senator Beyer, what we're looking for here is for a person who owns the property themselves. They are exempt from having to be licensed as a farm worker camp operator if the camp is located on their own property. So what we're looking for is a person that has a substantial ownership interest in the property, as is evidenced by their being subject to a farm use assessment in a particular statutory scheme, as well as filing farm-related income tax returns. And I'm sorry, my name for the record is Christine Hammond. I'm the administrator of the Wage and Hour Division.
We weren't going to stop you until you got...
So this is, again, this is an exemption from the requirements for a farmer to have a farm worker camp endorsement and license himself if the camp is located on his or her own property. So this tax filing is only one of the tests to meet that requirement.
Any other questions for the panel at this point? Okay.
We've received a letter in support from John McCulley representing the tree fruit growers, and it should be on your desk. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I do have that. Thank you very much. If there's not any other questions, I'm going to go ahead and call Mr. Schellenberg up. And Commissioner, if you want to just stay there, because I think you're going to be here most of the afternoon.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Glad to be at your disposal.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I'm Don Schellenberg, Associate Director of Government Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau. As a general farm organization, we concern ourselves with the overall needs of farmers and ranchers, including the area of labor issues. We have a 14-member labor advisory committee that pays special attention to the labor needs of Oregon agriculture. This committee met recently and considered the bills that you have before you today. Prior to that meeting, the committee met with staff from Bowie and heard their presentation on the need for these bills. Our labor committee met again and has considered these bills before you today. We support Senate Bill 131 as it technically broadens the universe of those eligible to operate a farm worker camp. An adequate amount of housing is important for the agricultural industry and its workers, and this bill moves in that direction. That's all I have to say about that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Schellenberg? If not, then I guess before y'all move away, because it sounds like Mr. Schellenberg, you also might want to give testimony to the others. Is there anyone else here in the room that wanted to give testimony today on Senate Bill 131? If not, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on 131, and at this time open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 132. And administrative counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 132 changes the requirement so that all farm labor contractors, not just farm labor contractors with regard to deforestation or the reforestation of lands, will provide workers' compensation and proof of workers' compensation.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. And this bill, if passed, would just make state law consistent in its treatment of farm labor contractors. And with farm forests, it would extend the requirement farm labor contractors provide proof of workers' compensation insurance as a condition of being issued a farm labor contractor's license by the Bureau of Labor and Industries. There is one issue that came up with MLAC this morning. Apparently, there are 27 different independent contractors in the farm area that are exempt from having workers' compensation. Of those, we don't know how many are fit into these type of contractors. It could be as little as zero or as much as, but we're not sure, one or two maybe. It's not our intent to necessarily incorporate more people into workers' compensation should they previously be exempt, but mostly to assure that contractors who are currently required to have workers' compensation on their employees provide the proof to the agency at the time of their applying for licensing.
Thank you. Questions for Commissioner Gardner on 132?
Mr. Chair, Senator? Not being a statutory expert, obviously, but I'm trying to figure out why it is now, because, I mean, the way I'm looking at the bill, in Section 2 of the bill, you're removing subsection 4, which says that these farm labor contractors have to be at workers' comp, but you're reinserting in Section 3 under a new subsection I, saying that these farm labor contractors now have to have workers' comp. So, I mean, it's, the way I'm looking at this, if you pass this bill, you haven't done anything except for move which statute the exact same language is in, but it's requiring the same thing no matter what.
Mr. Chair, Christine Hammond with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. That's right. And the reason that we're doing it this way, or legislative council drafted it this way, is there used to be separate provisions for farm labor contractors and forest labor contractors. We're now consolidating the provisions for both farm and forest labor contractors, so both types of contractors are subject to the same provisions. what we wanted to accomplish and what this bill does accomplish is require farm labor contractors to provide evidence of workers' compensation insurance coverage for their workers. What we inadvertently did and didn't realize until this morning is require farm labor contractors to provide workers' compensation insurance even for themselves. And in business configurations that the Workers' Compensation Division may not require coverage for. And the reason that happened is because the legislature several years ago decided to require reforestation contractors to provide workers' compensation coverage for themselves regardless of their business type. And when legislative council drafted this bill, they subjected farm labor contractors to those same requirements. Frankly, we're scratching our heads trying to remember why reforestation contractors, why the legislature decided they wanted to make them insure themselves, even though the Workers' Compensation Division doesn't require that. And we can try to go back and research that. Like I said, we just realized this happened this morning. There must have been some reason the legislature made that decision when they did. Our primary objective is just to require farm labor contractors to provide evidence of the insurance that they're already required to have as a condition of getting a license from us. We weren't attempting to expand any coverage provisions.
So, just so I'm clear, the current law says a farm labor contractor has to have workers' comp, has to provide workers' comp insurance, but they don't have to notify you that they have it?
Correct.
Is that?
That's accurate.
Anything else?
Senator, just a quick question. I think it's on page 7, line 6. You use the term employee endorsement. What does that mean? I just simply don't know what it means.
Senator Whitsitt, can you show me what line you're on?
Page 7, line 6. A farm labor contractor is subject to an employee endorsement. What is that?
Chair Pozanski, Senator Whitsitt. We also license employees of farm labor contractors if the employee is engaged in covered farm labor contracting activity. They also have to be licensed under the farm labor contractors law, and their license is called an employee endorsement.
Okay, thank you. Anyone further, please?
You bet.
On the same page, you have deleted the entire former three, sub three there. On line 10 and 11, I wonder what effect that has on the bill.
Senator Whitsitt, I'm sure it's been moved to another section. It's not a substantive change. Again, we're trying to combine two separate sections, one relating to currently relating to farm labor contractors and another relating to reforestation contractors, and treat them both the same. So what legislative council has done here is take pieces from both of those and combine them where appropriate so that they apply to both rather than separate provisions. And I'll make sure to find where exactly that is addressed elsewhere in the bill.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Boley representatives? Mr. Schellenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. We support the concept of workers' compensation for employees. We think that's something that's necessary, and we've supported that all along. To the extent that this bill does that and doesn't do anything more, we support the bill.
Okay.
I, too, had trouble looking at this bill, and maybe if I could maybe offer an explanation to the last question. On page 7, line 13, and on line 14, the reference is to 658.417.4. If you turn back to page 4, line 29, that's being deleted. And so so they had to take the reference to that out of the old subsection 3 there, and the new language in B on line 9 there, 658.440, then is the reference back to the new language on page 5. Hmm. So it's
thanks, Don.
It's what LC does. You know.
Great mind. Are there any questions for Mr. Schellenberg? If not, I'm going to let you all just stay there and just ask if there's anyone else here today who wanted to give testimony today on Senate Bill 132. Not hearing any or seeing anyone running to the podium, we'll close the public hearing on 132, and we'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 133. Counsel?
Am I counsel?
You are counsel.
All right. Senate Bill 133 increases the amount of damages of a person acting as a farm labor contractor from $500 to $2,000 for certain violations. And I also want to point out in Senate Bill 133 we have a -1 amendment, and everyone should have gotten a copy of that. And the effect of the -1 amendment is to delete the reference of with regard to forestation or reforestations of lands for the amount of damages. This amendment makes it so damages will increase for all farm labor contractors if this bill passes. Take those subset out.
Okay, and let's see, on 133 we have the commissioner and Ms. Hammond. Why don't you go ahead and give us your presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Basically, Senate Bill 133 simply changes the fine for unlicensed farm labor contractor from $500 to $2,000. The concept came out of meeting with a group of farm labor contractors prior to last legislative session where they requested actually that we go ahead and do this because they didn't believe that current law is a significant deterrent and it may result in a competitive disadvantage to licensed contractors who are operating within the law, within the current bounds of the law, and felt that by increasing this that would be a larger deterrent to those who are not following the current law.
All right. Questions for the commissioner or Ms. Hammond?
I got a question. Somewhere, and I think maybe it was the Farm Bureau's testimony, which we haven't gotten yet, but we do have the written copy of it here already. It says that this doesn't apply to farmers. And my question is, what is the definition between a farmer and a farm labor contractor, and how do they differ?
Chair Pozanski, Senator Beyer, for the record, Christy Hammond with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. A farm labor contractor is somebody who recruits, solicits, or supplies workers for a fee and provides them to a farmer. Farmers are specifically exempt from the provisions of the farm labor contractor law. They're exempt. They're not farm labor contractors if they're recruiting workers for their own operation. The only time the farm labor contractor law applies and comes into play is when somebody is recruiting workers and getting paid to supply those workers to a farmer. So Senate Bill 133 provides it's really a private right of action. It's not a civil penalty, but it's a private right of action for damages for anybody, including another contractor, who is damaged as a result of unlawful activity by a farm labor contractor, not by a farmer.
Well, if a farmer has a crew of workers and, harvesting something or doing something, and they, find themselves in a position where their crop is in and they have 2 days that they don't have work for their workers, their neighbor across the road has work. If the farmer tells his crew, come to work today, you're going to go work for Farmer Joe, but you're still on my payroll because I have no work for 2 days, but if this is Monday and Wednesday, you're going to come back and go work for me. Is that person now an unlicensed farm labor contractor?
Chair Pozanski, Senator Beyer, no. There's a special exclusion for that type of situation between farmers. In that case, the farmer's probably not being paid for providing the workers, for one thing, but I believe there's a specific exclusion in the law for farmers to exchange workers between themselves.
Do you happen to know where that is?
I'm looking for it.
And Senator, I think I saw that too. I was kind of trying to bone up on the definitions and stuff, and somewhere on top I saw that too, but I'm not sure where.
You're so good.
Maybe.
440.
But I'm guessing. As Ms. Hammond's looking for that, Commissioner, one of the things that she did testify to, that to actually be a farm worker contractor does in fact require some type of payment from the person receiving the workers to the person providing the workers.
Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct.
And so if that element's not there, then they would not fit the definition.
That's true, Mr. Chair, they would not.
Mr. Chair,
you bet.
But in my example, yeah, the farmer A, who the workers work for, is receiving payment because he is paying the workers and the farmer B is paying him.
Yeah, but
the workers are staying in his employment.
Right. But the contractor is basically when I go out to ABC farm worker contractor and say, I need X number of workers to work for me, and I will pay you a sum of money for them for you to provide those workers. And what I heard your situation was, if you have two farmers adjacent to property owners, and one needs work and the other one doesn't have any work for their workers, so long as they stay on their payroll, or even if they shift it over to the other person's payroll.
Well, if they shift it to the other person's payroll, it's clear, very clear.
Right.
That if they stay on Farmer A's payroll but are working for Farmer B, and then Farmer B, when they come back, sends Farmer A bill and says, here's the bill for those workers' work.
Yeah, well, but Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, they don't actually collect, in your scenario, they don't actually collect a fee for that. They actually reimburse for actual wages that were paid. There's a difference between the two in whether they accept an additional fee or not, even in the original definition before we even get to the exclusion.
Okay. And Mr. Schellenberg, you're kind of nodding your head from your understanding and experience. Is that what you believe is the...
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Don Schellenberg, Farm Bureau. Yes, that's how I would understand the law as well.
Okay. Right.
If that additional fee that makes you... If you say, I'm going to send my workers over there and you pay them, but you pay me another $100 so on top of it, that would then make you a farm labor contractor. But if you're just paying the workers for working there, then you're not a farm labor contractor.
As long as you're only being reimbursed for actual wages or pay.
Right.
Wages and costs, I would hope.
Well, wages,
right.
That would be part of the cost.
Right.
You know, Social Security, any other deductions, yeah.
Ms. Hammond, did you...
Chair Posansky, yes. It's actually a rule interpreting the statute, and it is listing those that are exempt under the provisions of the Farm Labor Contractor Law. And the exemption reads, individuals who perform labor in connection with an agreement for the exchange of labor or services with each other, provided that the work is performed on land owned or leased by the individuals.
And could you give us the...
It's OAR 839-015-0130-16.
And if you'll say that one more time, just a little bit
slower.
Sorry.
OAR 839-015-0130, sub-16.
Thank you very much. Any other questions regarding it? Oh,
yes,
Senator Whitson, I apologize.
Yes, fine. Director Gardner, on the either the fine or the administrative fee that you have here, if the Commissioner of Bureau of Labor brings that lawsuit, does that fine go to the general fund, or does it go to the Bureau of Labor and Industry, or does it go to somebody that you represent?
Chair Prozanski, Senator Whitsett, we've never taken an action under this provision. It does provide that the Bureau could take an action, but I'm not sure how the Bureau would actually be damaged, what kind of damages the Bureau would be seeking to recover. So this, again, is really a private right of action for somebody that's been damaged. And I guess I don't know the answer to that question. I'll have to find out.
Could you please, because I think that's you know, a valid question is no, if you did actually take some steps against someone.
Well, Senator Posansky, I can tell you that civil penalties assessed by the Agency for Farm Labor Contractor Violations all go to the Housing Fund for Farm Worker Camp. There's a special fund set up in the Housing Department, but since this isn't a civil penalty, I'm not sure that that's where this money would go, but I can find out.
That'd be great.
Yes, just a comment. That was really the crux of my question. I was a little unclear how bully could be damaged, and if they're not capable of being damaged, then why is bully's name there as a possible litigant?
Senator Whitsitt, Chair Posansky, the only thing I can think of is if you look at the language previous to the language relating to the actual damages, it's talking about bringing a suit to enjoin an employee, a farm labor contractor, somebody from violating the law. So the commissioner would obviously be more interested in doing that, in enjoining a person from using the services of an unlicensed farm labor contractor, or enjoining any person to act as a farm labor contractor in violation of the law, or from committing future violations. And then it goes on to say, in addition to that, any damages can be recovered from a person acting as a farm labor contractor. So again, I could see the Bureau taking an action to enjoin violations. I don't know how we would be damaged and be seeking to recover damages, unless it's our costs in pursuing the injunctive action, although it provides for that as well. It says the court may award to the prevailing party costs and disbursements and reasonable attorney fees. So, again, we've never used this provision. The Bureau has never used this provision, to my knowledge. It's more of a private right of action for someone that's damaged as a result of unlawful activity by a contractor.
Thank you. Anything else? Mr. Schellenberg, I don't think we've heard from you on this one.
Mr. Chairman, Don Schellenberg, Farm Bureau. We're taking a neutral position on this one in view of the exemption that's been discussed.
Okay, thank you. And is there anyone else here that would like to speak on Senate Bill 133? Not seeing anyone. We'll close the public hearing on 133, and we'll open up a public hearing on 134.
Senate Bill 134 provides an alternative method for service for an unregistered camp operator who is unavailable in the state. We have received a letter in support from John McCulley representing the tree fruit growers, but it has a condition, and the condition is, as long as the service of process to a party other than a farm worker camp operator occurs only in the case of an unregistered facility. You should have that letter on your screen.
That was in the packet with the previous...
It was loose on the desk.
Okay. Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. This bill would allow the Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries to accept process service on behalf of farm worker camp operators who are operating unregistered camps if the camp operator is not available to accept the service. A similar provision to this already exists in farm labor contractor law for persons who act as an unlicensed farm labor contractor. It's actually, on occasion, an unlicensed contractor also operates the unlicensed labor camp and commits other violations of ORS 658705 through 850 and pertaining to farm worker camps. Although Bowley or any other person may pursue violations of those contractors by serving the commissioner, if the operator is no longer available for service, the farm worker camp violations may not currently be pursued if the camp operator cannot be served.
Questions for Commissioner? Mr. Schellenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. We, too, support this bill. We do not tolerate in Farm Bureau unregistered farm labor camps. And in fact, we've worked to close them down when it seems that agencies haven't been able to do that. And so we think this bill certainly moves in that direction and would help eliminate unregistered camps. So therefore, we do support Senate Bill 134.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for anyone on the panel? If not, is there anyone here in the room that would like to give testimony on Senate Bill 134 that has not had the chance? I don't see anyone, and so I'm going to go ahead and close.
Well, Mr. Chair, one last comment I forgot to mention was in reference to the letter that you received. The answer is yes, it only refers to the section he was asking about. It only refers to the one to the camps.
All right. Thank you for putting that on the record. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 134. And at this time, we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 135.
Senate Bill 135 requires farm labor contractors to submit payroll records to the Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. This bill has a dash one amendment, which deletes the requirement that the person who uses a farm labor contractor must verify that the contractor has submitted payroll records before the person pays the contractor. You should have received those in your packet. And received a letter of opposition from John McCauley from the tree fruit growers, which should be on your desk.
All right. Commissioner, why don't you start off?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Senate Bill 135, this bill would require both farm and forest labor contractors to file certified true copies of their payroll records at Foley. Currently, only forest labor contractors are required to file these payroll records. Submission of the certified payrolls is an effective tool for resolving wage disputes, monitoring a contractor's compliance, and with wage and hour law compliance, and verifying a contractor adheres to wage agreements made with the contract workers. In addition, the payroll also provides that the only opportunity for the Bureau to detect potential unlawful deductions that may have been made from the earnings of worker. Thus, it allows early intervention in resolving non-compliant pay practices. In its current form, the bill has a couple of components requiring the contractor submit the certified payrolls. One of the questions that has come to a lot of people's mind is how often would it be required? It would be required to be submitted every 35 days. We do actually have online our own form for it, which they can use or they can not use. If they do electronic payroll, we'd accept their payroll records, you know, in their own format. There's not a, you know, an attempt to create any form of new forms that they'd have to create that they wouldn't already have in their own existing payrolls. It really does give us a tool in order to help catch problems early. If there are complaints, to go back and verify against those records. So it can be beneficial in some ways to not only to the Bureau, not only to employees, but to employers as well to have that ability.
Thank you. Questions for the Commissioner?
Question first for the Chair on John McCauley's, really his objections here are pretty have already been taken out of the bill, haven't they?
Ms. Braun?
I'm not sure. I'd have to ask the agency representative to look at the bill.
We're not moving them today. That's a good question. And did you catch the question?
I don't have his copy of his letter.
Well, we'll get a copy set to you. What we're going to do is we're keeping notes as to which ones we wanted you to get back to us on. My hope is that you will be able to work on that over the weekend, and more than likely we will have these set for work sessions next week.
I do have another question.
And Senator Wissett, please continue.
Chair Prasansky, Ms. Hammond, could you define for me the term certified payroll?
Chair Prasansky,
is that something that is already
Senator Wissett, yes. Reforestation contractors are already required to submit certified payroll reports to us. This information includes a list. It's typical payroll information, the names, addresses of all the employees of the contractor, their rate of pay, the total number of hours worked, and the deductions taken from that employee's gross earnings, and submit those records to us and certify their accuracy. We can look at them and determine that they've been paid at least the minimum wage and that the deductions made are in compliance with the law.
And a certified payroll record would not be required of other types of employers?
Senator Whitsitt, currently they're required of prevailing wage rate, public works contractors under a separate law, and reforestation contractors.
Okay. Any other follow-up or questions? Mr. Schellenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg representing Oregon Farm Bureau. And again, because of the exemption that farmers who are not also farm labor contractors, but because of that exemption, we're taking a neutral position on this issue. It does not require any additional requirements for farmers. So, again, we're taking a neutral position. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. If there's no other questions for the panel, I'm going to ask you to step back. There is another individual who'd like to testify on this bill, and I apologize. I'm reading my, is it Narges Shaddad?
Shadbe.
Thank you. If you'd please state your name for the record.
Yes.
Go ahead and give us your testimony.
Okay. My name is Narges Shadbe. I'm with the Oregon Law Center, and I'm simply here to support the Senate bills. I think you went through them one by one, and the way I'd written it was 131 through 135. But
okay.
In any case, I just wanted to let you know that, you know, based on my experience, I've been a farm worker lawyer for some 20 years, and I see the proposals as somewhat technical corrections that are needed in the provision, and in particular, I think one Senate Bill 135 would be useful. I just wanted to put it in context a little bit for Chair and the committee that a large number of workers in the field don't speak English. They speak Spanish. Of late, I think it's important for lawmakers in our state to know that a large number of folks don't speak Spanish either, but speak other indigenous languages. Therefore, any kind of documentation that the commissioner is recommending in a bill, for example, the certified payroll record, would be critical for these workers if they don't have their wage information, do not get adequate wage information. So to the extent that the bills strengthen the act and provide for documentation that people who are monolingual in Spanish and other languages can point to support their position, it would be useful for the workers, I think for the farmers, and for labor contractors who are complying. Thanks for your consideration.
Thank you. Any questions? Is it Shadbe?
Shadbe, yes.
Shadbe. Okay. Any questions for Ms. Shadbe? Commissioner, it looks like you have a few statements you have to make.
Just a very short one, Mr. Chair, is that having had a chance to review the letter from the tree fruit growers, Senator Whitsitt's absolutely correct. That is referencing a section that the amendment would be deleting.
Okay.
All
right. Mr.
Chair.
Go ahead, Senator
Meyer. Now that the commissioner is back up there, there's a couple questions that this other testimony brought forward. What information, wage information, now is required to be on pay stubs?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Meyer, it's required to be on pay stubs to show the hours that are worked, the rate of pay that you're being paid, and any deductions made from the paycheck, whether they be federal taxes, state taxes, or any other deductions, to just identify what they are.
And follow up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's required on pay stubs of anyone, including farm labor contractor employees.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, yes, it is. It's required on any by any employee working for any company within the state, yes.
Okay. Another question. So then, this information, and I'm sorry, I'm going to butcher the name too, so I'm not going to try, but the previous witness,
Chevay,
she said this would, this information, if it's furnished to the Bureau, would be a great help in assisting, you know, non-English speaking, if they're faced with Southern English workers, and figuring out what was taken, what would happen with their paycheck, but yet they already have that information with every paycheck, isn't that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, they would. I think probably, not to speak for her, but most workers don't understand what is and is not a legal deduction. While it is, while it is the law to state what those deductions are, one of the most common ones we see, and I, you know, to tell you a very quick story, it's actually happened to me about 6 months ago when I was in the bank doing my own banking. There was a young lady behind me who said, "My God, I can't believe it. They took out for my uniform." Being a nosy individual, I turned around, had a conversation with her. It turns out they took out $25 for a hat, which, by the way, was rather colorful, and I don't think she'd wear it anywhere other than to work, but and a shirt. That's an illegal deduction. You cannot deduct for a uniform. And ended up giving her my card, and we actually recovered that $25 for her and for any other employee at the establishment. It's not, you know, so I think where she means it would be helpful is in identifying where perhaps an illegal deduction is made that otherwise a person would not necessarily know, such as a young person just coming into the workforce or a Hispanic worker would not necessarily know that deduction was illegal.
But if a person now, without this law, and they're working for a XYZ corporation or a farm labor contractor, if they have questions about deductions on the pay stub and they come to your office, you can look at those and know if they're legal or not legal and take action.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, absolutely we could and we would take action. I think the difference here, and really where it's more beneficial to the employer, most of the time when these situations happen, the employer is not aware that that's an illegal deduction, despite the fact that we, you know, as we've testified here before, have a technical assistance unit that puts on seminars all over the state. We have brochures and booklets and websites that will identify all of those types of areas. It really is actually not only beneficial to the employee to do that, but beneficial for the employer. It's a lot easier to go back and have an employer correct something that they've made a mistake for a month than to go back and correct years worth of it. It's a lot less financially impactful on the employer, and it's a, you know, it doesn't create them a situation where they've got to go track down all the employees for the last year or two or however long we can go back, given the statute of limitations on various different items within the law.
One more.
Mm-hmm.
With the information, if these these certified reports you currently receive, are those become confidential information or is it open to public records laws?
Senator Prezansky, Senator Beyer, payroll information is exempt from disclosure under the public records law. So personal information about the earnings and deductions for individual employees are exempt from disclosure, and we would not provide those to anybody who requests them. We would redact that confidential information from the records. Redact.
Cover or exclude.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, whenever someone requests a file on a particular situation, we redact a lot of different information for HIPAA, for payroll, anything that's, you know, not subject to public records.
So, I guess just one more follow-up. Is that a requirement, or is that at your discretion that you could turn them over if you so chose to a public request or to a request with somebody saying, "I want to see the you know, the certified payroll reports of farm labor contract or you know XYZ," and you could, is it your discretion that you say, I don't have to give you that, or you say, "Well, I can do that."
Senator Beyer, the public records law prohibits the disclosure of that information.
Any other follow-up?
All right, thank you very much. Before we close for the day,
I just kind of want to go through our list of what I have as things that need to be done or where we're at on these bills. To my understanding, Senate Bill 131 seemed to be okay with no additional amendments or clarification from Boley. On Senate Bill 132, it appears that there's amendments needed based on what you learned this morning, and so there'll be something brought forward for that. On 133, I know we have Dash 1 amendments that still need to be adopted, and also a follow-up to Senator Wissett's question as to who gets the actual damages. On 134, I had that as a clear with nothing else that needed to be done. And the last one is Senate Bill 135, which has a Dash 1 amendment that needs to be adopted before we move forward. Council, is there anything else that you had noted that we needed to do on those bills before we can move them?
Nope, that's it. Thank you.
All right. And thank you very much for your time. We're going to go ahead and close the today's public hearings on these five bills. And we'll be back next week.